This is the one with the god of all Daleks.
And an oncoming storm.
There is a big bad wolf coming.
And the Time War ends.
And with more death than any New Who so far.
It's Piper and Eccleston's parting of the ways.
Here we and they go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Cyber, Zandun, wow!
Chen and Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all New Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than who back when? Who Back When?
Hello, and welcome to episode N013 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin. And who are you?
I'm JD.
Yes, you are. And today we are reviewing The Parting of the Ways. It is the culmination of Eccleston's run as the Doctor. It is the finale of the two-part finale of Eccleston's Doctor Who. I apologize. I have not had a coffee in a good few hours. It's fantastic, though. It is an amazing episode. Such a conclusion.
It's good.
Yeah.
I think I summed that up quite nicely.
Yeah, I think you did. Dude Meister, do you want to jump into A Parting of the Ways? Biscal. I said it in the original Celtic there.
Yes, let's.
Okay. The Doc and Jack mount a rescue mission for Rose using the Tribophysical Macrokinetic Waveform Extrapolator, a big gun, and a TARDIS.
They meet up with the new head of the Daleks, a reformed Dalek Emperor who calls himself the God of all Daleks, with the standard Daleks as his worshippers.
There is a battle for the future of the Earth, and the Doctor sends Rose back to safety while Jack performs a heroic defense of the space station.
But the bad wolf story is about to come full circle, and we have yet to witness the most literal Deus Ex Machina in Doctor Who history. But that's okay, because for the final time, it's bloody fantastic.
End of Biscal.
And you're welcome.
Damn right you are. Don't say we never give you anything. Okie dokie.
The Daleks are trundling around getting ready for the oncoming Doctor.
Yes, who is just speeding through space with Captain Jack. And correct me if I'm wrong. Wait, hang on. I might actually be wrong on this one. I may even have caught myself out already. But is this the first time that we properly see the TARDIS travel through space as opposed to space and time? In New Who.
Yeah, even in any Who, this is quite a unique way of doing things.
Yeah.
We've seen the TARDIS in time vortexes before, but this is the TARDIS.
X-winging all over the place.
Yeah, as spaceship. And you know, the Daleks launch missiles at it, and Rose says, but you can't, the TARDIS hasn't got any defences and you're going to kill him. To classic Who people, that is a ridiculous statement. because of the hostile action displacement system and, you know...
Wait, no, I don't know. What is this?
It was something that was introduced in the Troughton era and that Matt Smith's era will bring back again. Basically, if the TARDIS is under threat, it will dematerialise and reappear somewhere else.
Ah, okay. That makes perfect sense. If you have a thing that can dematerialise and rematerialise, why wouldn't you just constantly do that? In fact, why would you even travel through space? Why wouldn't you just beam?
Exactly. But either way, meanwhile, on the TARDIS,
yep,
the missiles hit it and...
Seemingly, for a moment there. Yeah, but for a moment there, even though obviously 15 seconds into the episode, they're not going to have died. But for that instant, at least, it is displayed as though the TARDIS has blown up.
Exactly, and then we get Jack explaining about how they're alive, and they've taken the Tribophysical Waveform Extrapolator.
Yeah, except what he says is, sorry to cut you off there, he says, the extrapolator's working, try saying that when you're drunk. And I just want to point out, it's not actually particularly difficult to say that.
I thought it was his next line.
Oh, shitballs.
Because what he says is, the extrapolator's working, we've got a fully functioning force field, try saying that when you're drunk.
Oh, I stand corrected. All right,
and the Doctor materializes the TARDIS around Rose
and
a Dalek.
And a Dalek. And Jack then blows up the Dalek with his...
Trini and Susanna gun.
Exactly. And in doing so, makes the first of many super cheesy action moves in this episode.
Yeah, but that's him. This is Jack.
Frank.
Yeah, I love it. I'm not saying that as criticism. Yeah, I absolutely right. love it. But
so Rose and the Doctor hug. We actually get it, it's great. You know, these three have great chemistry.
Oh, they do. They really, really do. And it seems as though we must have missed out on so many adventures. As in, not missed out. They must have had so many adventures in our absence, so to speak. They're just so close. They're such a nicely tight-knit group.
We then get a little bit of a scene outside, and all we hear is a very deep, booming voice going, "Patience, my brethren."
Yeah. Awesome voice, by the way. Fantastic voice.
Very well done.
Yeah.
And then we get exposition TARDIS, which is literally, hold on, how come there's Daleks? You said there weren't any.
Yeah.
Going back to what the Doctor said in Dalek. Jack gives us slightly more exposition, which is they're the greatest threat in the universe, and then the next minute they vanished. Time war, time war. Everyone burned.
Yeah. In fact, the Doctor, does he not even say it was the great war between the Time Lords and the Daleks? The Time Lords died, but they took the Daleks with them, which I think is the first time that we get that detail.
Correct.
Anyway, the question is, how did they survive? And that magnificent, dark and booming voice goes, "They survived through me." I don't have that voice, unfortunately.
Before we get that...
Oh, shit, balls.
We actually get... The Doctor steps outside of the TARDIS.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And the Daleks trying to exterminate him, but the extrapolator is actually putting a force field around the TARDIS.
Yes.
So they can't.
Can I just pop in a little screenshot note here? I'm going to be adding a couple of screenshots at least about this, because I'm pretty sure he steps out of that force field's range on a number of occasions. I don't want to be nitpicky or anything.
And the Doctor is just full on really annoyed now. And we get the revelation that the Daleks actually have nicknamed him.
Yeah. He says, what is it that you call me? Your Dalek legends, they call me the Oncoming Storm. Which I think is kind of meh. Is it just me?
No, it's not just you, but...
But, okay. It's not the first time that we've had a monologue of that ilk. I think in Dalek we got something similar as well.
Ah, but it is also the Daleks are not the first species to have called the Doctor the Oncoming Storm.
Oh, really?
Tell me more, JD. Frontier in Space,
the
Draconians have called the Doctor the Oncoming Storm.
Draconians? Which Doctor is this?
Pertwee.
Oh, that is pretty radtastic trivia. I had no idea. Sure, I have not seen that.
Well, and then they get to the bit that you just mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And it is actually really good. You know, when the Doctor says, "How do you survive the Time War?"
Yeah, and we get
the answer. They survived through me.
Very, very cool. And so we're now introduced to the... The person who is speaking, this is the Dalek Emperor. It's just another Dalek, but he's in this massive freaking stationary, by the way. Stationary Dalek kind of suit. So he can't move around. I guess his suit is essentially the spaceship that they're in. He's at the core of it. And he is the Dalek Emperor.
I think the important thing here is to compare the look of the Dalek Emperor.
Yeah, I've made a few notes about that as well. With the other Daleks.
No.
Oh, okay.
With two other Dalek Emperors. The main one being the one in the Troughton episode Evil of the Daleks.
You know what? I didn't even know that there was a Dalek Emperor.
Compare it to the Dalek Emperor's look in Evil of the Daleks. And also the claimed to be Dalek Emperor from Remembrance of the Daleks. And they all look very different to each other. And this is easily the best.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to include a few screenshots of previous emperors in that case, just for comparison's sake. Very cool. So has the Dalek Emperor previously been some, like, this massive Dalek, this massive stationary Dalek?
Evil of the Daleks, it was a massive stationary thing.
Okay.
In Remembrance of the Daleks, no.
Ooh.
It was moving and smaller, but it was almost Dalek-sized, but it was a fake Dalek Emperor at that point, so...
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense, then. Can I also just point out, since we're talking about what the Dalek Emperor looks like in this one, that he looks significantly more testicular than the Daleks that we have seen so far.
Yes.
In fact, he looks like two different sets of testicles.
Yes.
He looks like a massive testicle that is attached to an upside-down scrotum.
I wouldn't go that far. I quite like it. I actually think...
Oh, yeah, no, I mean this in a good way. I like monsters that look like testicles, but there is something incredibly testicular about him.
No, I can't wait until you see Irato.
Oh, really? Okay.
It is from the episode The Creature from the Pit.
Okay.
I'm leaving it there. I'll wait until we get to Creature from the Pit. Or you, it's a classic episode, so you get to Creature from the Pit.
Okay. All right. Looking forward to it.
Anyway, so we find out that the Emperor was the one that teleported everyone off the game station and filtered, pulped, and sifted through the bodies, and only one cell in a billion was fit to be nurtured. Rose then pops up and says, well, that makes the Daleks half-human. And then we get the Emperor saying... Those words are blasphemy! And then
excellent.
All the Daleks go, do not blaspheme.
Yeah, excellent impression there.
And the doctor just goes, what the fuck? Since when do Daleks have any concept of religion?
Yeah, there's actually a really strange vibe here, I think. Because he does say that all of these Daleks have gone insane. And that part of the reason why, or possibly, in fact, the reason they've gone insane, is that they hate their partly human form.
Well, that's possible, yeah.
Yeah, but isn't that a little bit weird? Like, why would... Okay, A, that's how they were created. Yeah, this is why they consider this emperor a god. Like, the Dalek god, spoiler alert. But... Why would they hate this one cell that was formed part of their creation? Like, it's just very odd.
That's incredibly easy to explain. The Daleks were made as a Nazi analogy originally. And that's shown nowhere better than in Genesis of the Daleks.
Right, which I see where you're going with this, yeah.
Just like in a World War II movie. And in the episode Remembrance of the Daleks, they're fighting over which Dalek is more pure than the other Dalek.
Yeah, we have this in Blood of the Daleks as well.
Exactly. And what you've got here is the fact that the Daleks are really, really into racial purity. And that's what...
I see what you're getting at. Yeah.
So their only emotion is hatred. That is the emotion that they have in their bodies.
So, well, given that, why are they worshipping a Dalek god that created them out of something impure?
Because the Emperor Dalek is the one that's gone crazy. He has gone crazy. His line is... I should do the entire episode in the voice of the Dalek Emperor.
Oh, do it.
I reached into the dirt and made new life. I am the god of all Daleks.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's not sufficient to just hear JD. You should have seen the look on his face when he made that voice. That was amazing. You know what? Fuck it. Screenshot.
Thank God this isn't recording video. Anyway, right, so... I hate you. Right, so, it starts up, the Emperor Dalek here is obviously the one that's crazy, because there is...
Yeah, but there's no rebellion, like, there could have been... I'm sorry to cut you off, but there could have been a Dalek rebellion, there isn't one.
No.
This guy is infallible, he's God.
Exactly, because he made them in his image.
But not quite, because he's pure, quote-unquote, and they are not.
Very true, but that's all he had to work from. That is, all he had to work on was human biomatter. So he's created a race of Daleks out of his own genetic material and humans. And what we've got here is, when he made the Daleks, what he's done is he's made them worship him. He's created a religion.
Oh, this is awesome. Seriously, that's a fantastically good point. I had not considered that at all. He hasn't just created them biologically, he has created them ideologically as well.
The doctor just says, add enough, and the three of them go back in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Huh. And they leave the Dalek spaceship. And bear in mind, you know, this is like 5 minutes into the episode.
Yeah, I know. So much is happening. It is setting up so much.
So the Doc, Jack, and Rose return to Satellite 5.
Yes, a.k.a. the game station.
They turn on all the radios, and apparently that stops the Dalek from teleporting on board.
Yeah.
Can we put a pin in something here?
Go for it. Pin away.
That's what we're pinning. The Daleks cannot transmat on board.
Okay.
Okay.
Pin acknowledged.
So, Linda with a Y is still there.
Oh, she's such a kiss ass.
Yeah, the doctor says, well, what are you still doing here? I told you to fuck off.
Yeah, she goes, like, oh, you know, I just wanted to help, you know, like, because I really want to be a companion. And when she says that she stuck around because she wanted to help, Rose looks genuinely jealous.
Just a small aside.
Okay.
There's a few rumours that occur about this episode, but this one is actually true. People did think that when they were watching this, that they were going to have Linda as a companion at the end of the episode.
Well, there's so much in this episode alluding to that.
Yeah, and thankfully, by this point, Billy Piper had already signed on for 2 seasons, so thank God we didn't get her. Because, honestly, season 2, Billy Piper, apart from Love and Monsters. So, anyway... down 500 floors below, we get irritating guy from The Weakest Link.
Yeah, Carabas.
Carabas, the Marquis de Carabas.
Yes.
Who's basically saying, where's my money? Give me my money. I won.
Oh my God, you're all about the voices this time. I love it.
But I'd be grateful, you know, if I ever do another Classic Who while Dodo is still in it, I'll do the entire thing in Cockney for you.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, would you like to hear that? I'm sure you would. Let's make that happen.
Call blimey, Doctor. We're my personality. Yeah. So the station controller turns around and goes, the Daleks are coming.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get another great line from the Emperor. And honestly, the Emperor is just getting the best lines until the end of the episode.
Yeah, everything he says is just so incredibly epic.
The planet will become my temple, and we shall rise.
Yeah, he also says, we shall purify the planet with fire.
Honestly, whoever wrote his lines, Russell T.
Yeah, Ross.
Obviously just liked the Emperor Dalek, because he's given all the good lines. So,
well done. He's created, Ross has created this incredibly scary character.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So, what the Doctor is going to do is, with his big transmitter of a space station, is going to create a delta wave of Van Cassadine energy to fry all of the Dalek brains.
Oh, Jesus balls. It is a rabbit being pulled out of a hat that is slightly bigger on the inside, and it's also the first of 2 Deus Ex Machina.
Well, actually, I wouldn't say this was a Deus Ex Machina.
Sorry. It's set up as though it's going to be the Deus Ex Machina.
It's a Chekhov's gun. It's a... you're shown the delta wave manipulator and you expect it to work.
Well, at least to be used in some way, to come up in the plot later on. But my point is, this is taken out of, thin air. There's never been any mention of a delta wave of Cassadine or Van Cassadine, Cassadine, whatever it is, energy. It's just all of a sudden the Doctor goes, maybe we could. Jack goes, oh, you're not thinking. Yes, I am. I'm thinking of a delta wave. And it's just like, oh, let's invent a sci-fi thing that might solve the situation. Spoiler alert, it's not going to solve the situation, but it's still something that's plucked out of the ether.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It now transpires that the Doctor doesn't really have enough time to do this, so needs some things to delay.
Yeah.
They've put the extrapolator around the top of the spaceship, so the Daleks can't fire in. So
wait. I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to interrupt you because I want to pop in a soundbite. In fact, I want to pop in loads of soundbites. I'm really sorry to interrupt you. This little bit, this scene, there are so many that's what he and or she says in that bit. As in when Jack makes his prediction of the Dalek attack. And bear in mind, this is a Dalek attack on a satellite that already looks like an assortment of wieners spinning around each other. But there are so many that's what she says in there. Let's have a little montage, shall we? What do you say? Montage?
Montage bite!
They can't blast us physically invading. On the top, they'll penetrate the station below that at Lord Dalek wide open.
There's 5 of us.
So Jack goes off to be the soldier.
Yeah.
Along with Linda with a Y, woman and man, basically.
Yeah, and we get another action cheese move from Jack as he risks blowing a hole in the hull of the space station and or killing civilians with like a ricocheting bullet, because he's firing live rounds at the ceiling at this point.
Yeah, he's gone down to floor 0 and he's basically going, we need more volunteers. there is an army about to invade this station. I need every last citizen to mount a defense.
Yeah. Meanwhile, either... Wait. Which, I'm just going to say, if I had been in that audience, I would have probably gone... I mean, I'd like to think that I would have volunteered, but most likely I would have gone, wait, hang on. So you're saying our options are either we follow a guy who just fired an automatic weapon at the ceiling, or we stay here and allegedly are killed by an alien race that we know was defeated millennia ago.
I'd join him. Anyway, yeah. Basically, Jack gets a couple of volunteers.
Yeah.
And then he turns round sarcastically. Okay, I said that the god of all Daleks gets the best lines. Jack gets some really good ones
as well. He does, yeah, you're right.
Because he says, a few words of advice for you. Be quiet. If you hear fighting up above, if you hear us dying, then tell me that Daleks aren't real.
Pretty badass.
I love Jack here.
Oh, Jack is amazing.
I don't think Jack has ever been as good as he is in this episode.
Really?
You know, this is, I think, and don't get me wrong, I don't think he's shit everywhere else. I think that this is obviously what Captain Jack Harkness had been written in to do. Mm. The reason why he'd been brought in an empty child was to have this moment here in Parting of the Ways. That's what it feels like.
Okay. Yeah, no, fair enough. I think he's fantastic in this as well. He is bombastically heroic. Very, very cool. Plus, he's wearing, I'm not sure, but I want to say leather trousers, and also a vest or a white t-shirt. Is it a white t-shirt or a black t-shirt? Doesn't matter.
He is totally John McClaning this scene.
Yeah, yeah, but with leather trousers.
Okay, he's Barrowman-ing.
Yeah, I'm saying this is badass. I wish I were man enough to pull off leather trousers.
There's a joke here. And, I'm not going down the line of pulling off people's leather trousers.
I went straight into that one.
Yes, that's what she said. You're just running into them today, aren't you? Anyway, back on floor 500.
Yes, sorry.
We get the Doctor and Rose, and basically the Doctor says, we could take the TARDIS away from here. We could leave. We could let history run its course.
Yeah.
And then Rose turns around and goes, yeah, we could, but...
We're not going to. Yeah, it dawns on the Doctor that escape had not dawned on Rose, because she's just that good a person in a way.
And yeah. Then...
Yeah.
He turns round and makes shit up. Literally, he is literally just making shit up on the spot and puts her in the TARDIS.
Yeah, should point out, though, that the way that he does this, or the reason that she even agrees to it in the first place, is that this delta wave of whatever it is energy started to amplify, but it's not quite amplified enough. And they don't yet know if they're even going to have enough time to get the delta wave up to the level where it will destroy the Daleks. So she suggests, we have a time machine, why don't we use it? I kind of want to ask you here, why can't they use the TARDIS to boost this delta wave? She's suggesting, well, let's just go back over our own timeline. And to be fair, they have tried that and didn't really work out very well. Yeah, the last time they did this. But they have just very recently boosted the TARDIS with the macrokinetic... God damn, have I already forgotten about this? The macrokinetic... Yes. Wait for it. Wait. No, I'm going to do this. Wait. The macrokinetic tribophysical waveform extrapolator. Did I get that right? Did I do it in the wrong order?
You did it in the wrong order, but never mind.
Okay. The tribophysical macrokinetic waveform extrapolator, that's what it was. So
yes.
That boosted the TARDIS and the TARDIS boosted it, respectively, right? So why can't they use the TARDIS to now boost the delta wave?
Okay. Would you like me to make up one of the many possible reasons?
Yes, please do.
The polarity is wrong. They don't have the right type of wires.
Dude,
the sheer,
dude, yeah. You had me at polarity.
I've watched this show for so long. Trust
really?
Me, really,
I can't tell.
I'm really. Basically, the Doctor locks her in the TARDIS, points his sonic screwdriver at it, and sends her away.
Yeah. Wait. Yes, that is true, but wait, we've skipped something that is actually really, really worth mentioning. The kiss. Jack's kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Kisses. So before Jack even went downstairs to do his little, like, Snake Plissken move on the audience, he first kisses Rose goodbye, and then, and this then spawned a million memes, then kisses the Doctor goodbye, and... It's not treated weirdly. It's just like, yeah, it's a kiss, and it's fantastic. And if you Google this now, if you Google Doctor Who kiss, that is the kiss that comes up.
Yeah, this is the... second kiss in Doctor Who, and it's the first one where a companion kisses him.
Wait, in all of Doctor Who?
Yes.
In all of Doctor Who, holy shit, the Doctor and a companion never kissed?
Yes.
44 years?
Doctor and a companion have kissed before now.
Okay.
The Doctor kissed a companion. This is the first time where the companion kisses the Doctor.
Oh, awesome. Holy shit, that makes it even more epic.
And only once, because it was in the Doctor Who movie with Paul McGann, the sainted Paul McGann, where he kisses Grace.
Uh-huh.
And now this is the first kiss between a companion and the Doctor.
Yeah.
First kiss between a male companion and the Doctor.
Yeah.
And I think it might actually be the first male kiss on Doctor Who. I'm not sure about that one, but I think it might be.
I've, not even seen about, I was going to say 60% of Classic Who, but it's closer to, 80% of Classic Who. I've never even seen it.
Let me explain one thing which shows you at the end of the Classic run. This was actually Peter Davison era, so it was about two-thirds of the way through.
Okay.
How ridiculous they were getting about displays of affection.
Really?
There is an anniversary episode called The Five Doctors.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that I know.
And they brought back the delightful Carol Ann Ford to play Susan, the Doctor's granddaughter.
Yeah.
They showed her the script, and she said, well, why am I calling the Doctor the Doctor? I always call him grandfather.
Yeah.
JNT, I think it was, turned around and went, well, we don't want the viewers to think that at some point in the past the Doctor might have had sexual relations with anyone. Therefore, we want you to call him the Doctor. And Carol Ann Ford, to her great credit, said, well, I'm not bloody well doing it then. Because that is a disgrace to William Hartnell's memory.
Yeah, so good for you, Carol Ann Ford.
I'm not very doing it. So, then if you now watch The Five Doctors, she says grandfather all the time through it, as she should have done.
Yeah.
So,
Carol Ann Ford. Well
good
done.
Good on Carol Ann Ford.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we just do a
little link between this kiss and something that we discussed in our Capaldi bonus episode?
We can do.
The lizard kiss.
Lesbian lizard.
Yeah, yes. Lesbian lizard kiss, which isn't actually a kiss, but which sparked clamors of hatred.
No, and thank you for your funny retorts on all of them, because they were utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, you're more than welcome, and I absolutely agree with you.
I watch this, and it's probably no surprise to the viewers, because I've mentioned it before. As a gay guy, I watched this and went, what the hell did they just do? I'm sitting here going, well, that's different. And then I moved on.
Sure.
You know, why would you ever, you know, because...
No, I'm sorry if you think that I'm making a really big deal out of this. But
no,
in going through the classics, we're encountering sexism on so many levels.
God, yeah. This shows.
And then we fast forward to Capaldi, and there are still... I think you said there were five or six, as in only five or six people who piped up in the audience. But I'm sure there were more people who actually piped up about this. But still, this kiss between the Doc and Captain Jack just cements the incredible progress. And also...
Oh, yes.
Just the fact that this is a show that is just pure honest. It's just... There you go.
And you know, the character of Captain Jack is, he just does this. You know, he's just saying goodbye because he knows he's not coming back.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, yeah, you're right in that it is a first for Doctor Who, but I don't think it is something which is particularly strange for television of its era,
yeah.
But it is strange for Doctor Who.
Can I point out something that you just said and ask a question about it?
You can point out anything I say. You know,
Do you really think that Jack knows that he's not going to come back alive?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Jack knows of the Daleks.
Yeah, that's true. He does.
Right. He says to the people, the guards had Bastic bullets, they're enough to blow a Dalek apart, right?
Yeah.
Jack is lying.
Yeah, he knows that that's not true. In fact, we get the line later on. You're lying, the bullets don't work. Yeah. No, you're right. So actually, that's very true.
He knows. Anyway. Skip to 5 minutes later, we get what is an amazing piece of acting from Eccleston.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's not even in the scene.
Yeah.
It's a hologram. The Doctor has sometime between World War III and now programmed this hologram.
Yeah.
Basically, it says, right, I'm dead or about to die, and I promised to look after you, which puts it after World War III and Aliens of London, where he promises to Jaffe.
Yeah, very true.
He look
I
after
was just about to say that, yeah.
the TARDIS is taking you home. Have a good life, Rose. Have a fantastic life.
Yeah, and while the Doctor is Princess Laying Rose, outside the TARDIS, as in on the station still, we get to see Eccleston just torn up. Because he hasn't, even though he's recorded this goodbye to Rose, he hasn't actually delivered it face to face.
Yeah,
he's so sad. He knows that now he's going to die and he's never going to see her again. Incredibly well done. Incredibly well acted.
Oh, yes, brilliant. Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. And then she runs out of the TARDIS and it's back home. It's the Powell estate.
Yeah. And who approaches? Fucking Ricky.
Mickey turns up, played by the amazing Noel Clarke.
Oh, hey, Noel. I'm glad you're listening again. How you doing? Thanks for tuning in.
And Rose, who is distraught at the loss of the Doctor, hugs him. Poor, poor Mickey. Back on the space station, Jack telephones the Doctor on the view screen. Doctor admits, well, I'll send her home.
Yeah, and Jack sort of accepts this. And then all of a sudden, and he goes, yeah, so is the David Carradine energy wave, is that going to be ready in time? And someone pops in on this transmission. I think this is where you want to pop back to the pin that you dropped in earlier. Is this it?
I've forgotten the pin I put in earlier. What pin was I putting in?
You popped in a pin. Hey, try saying that when you're drunk. You popped in a pin about, what was it? They were blocking transmissions? No, they were blocking the beaming thingamajiggy.
No, my pin isn't ready yet. My pin's still materializing. It's not quite here yet.
Oh, okay, very good. All right.
Okay. The god of all Daleks, like an unwanted guest at a party, pops his head around the door.
I can imagine the party, by the way. He turns up like, bing bong. He's like, hello, I heard you were having a wine tasting party. No? Sorry.
He explains that the Delta Wave will kill everything in his path, human and Dalek.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, quite casually goes, all things will die by your hand.
Yeah, he has actually just lost his complete and utter mind. Lost his mind completely and utterly. He has completely and utterly lost his mind, is what I'm trying to say. And this is at the same time also a callback to how Eccleston started the episode, where he said the Time Lords died, but in doing so, they took the Daleks with them. And this now calls back to that, because now mankind is going to die if he uses this weapon. Mankind is going to die, but in effect, he will take the Daleks with him.
Except it won't, because of the next line that they said.
Oh, okay, sorry, what was that?
Which the Doctor says, the human race would survive in some shape or form, but you are the only Daleks in existence. So he will wipe out a planet of humans, but he will wipe out every Dalek. And, the Emperor actually does the first, you know, we've said a few times about how sometimes, and we will see it, dear God, later on in the Tennant era, about how they often compare the Doctor to a mythical, like, deity type figure.
Yeah.
But now the Emperor actually says, if I am the God, the creator of all things, then what does that make you, Doctor? The destroyer of all Daleks. So he is like the Satan of the Daleks.
Yeah, very true.
And in a way, you know, that's referred to in Asylum of the Daleks, where the Doctor says he is the predator, is called the predator of the Daleks.
The predator of the Daleks. Ah, okay.
That's what he's called in Asylum.
Yeah.
Jack reaffirms how much that he trusts the Doctor.
Yeah, he knows the price that they would pay and that mankind would pay if they lose this battle and if they don't detonate the David Carradine ray. So, yeah, no, he trusts him implicitly.
And so, then, Doc...
Sorry, go for it.
Doc and the Emperor continue their little tete-a-tentacle and basically says, now you tell me, God of all Daleks, because I'm a curious soul. The one thing I haven't worked out, I've seen these words drawing me here, bad wolf spread across time and space. How did you do it? And the Emperor didn't.
Hmm.
This was not him.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So I wonder if we're going to find out who did. Exciting stuff!
Skip to domestic unbliss. Mickey and Rose and the now turned up Camille Kadrouri. Welcome back, Camille. As Jackie are having food in some sort of fast food place.
Yeah, it's like a kebab shop.
Jackie and Mickey are being perfectly normal, and Rose is being mopey.
Yeah, mopey. Yes, well, I would say justifiably despondent.
And she's pointing out that the one thing we know in Doctor Who is even though she's 2,000 years in the past...
Yeah.
Sorry, 200,000 years in the past.
200,000, yeah, you're right.
Time moves at the same rate for a Doctor and their companion. So the fight is happening right now, and he's fighting for us. And I'm here eating chips.
Wait, hang on. Explain that logic again. Time moves at the same pace for a Doctor and his companion.
It always seems to. Like, the Doctor sends the companion off, and then...
When she comes back, the exact same amount of time has passed in his time. Yeah, I know. Actually, I made that note as well. But I think narratively it works out just perfectly.
And then Jackie, dear God, love her, says, you know, I have hated the Doctor, but right now I love him more than anything else because he sent you back to me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's lovely because he is doing what he promised he would always do to Jackie.
Yeah. This, by the way, is happening at the same time as in it's intercut with what's going on the space station.
Correct.
And what's happening here is the Daleks have now entered. Partly we get not quite companion Linda with a Y, who's on the observation deck that they've been on before, that they were on in, what was it called again?
The Long Game.
The Long Game, bingo. And behind, like, a safety door. And we also get the people, Carabas and the other audience members.
On Floor Zero.
On Floor Zero, exactly. Who can hear the Daleks entering, and who are just literally and figuratively soiling themselves. And we get to see, like, this weird grid animation of what's happening, like an X-ray, essentially, of the station. As the Daleks just enter. But rather than try to head towards the Doctor and Jack straight away, or head to the top of the station, they go down towards Floor Zero.
Because they are just that evil.
Yeah.
We skip back down to the Powell estate.
Let's do it.
Mickey and Rose are now, they've had their chips. They're in some sort of playground. And Mickey is doing his level best to say, start living your own life, proper life, you know, the sort of life you could have.
With me.
With me.
Yeah.
It's almost like... Sorry, I went close to the microphone there like I do for the Dalek Emperor. And Mickey is no Dalek Emperor.
No, he is not.
The sort of life you could have had with me.
Oh my
God. The Dalek Emperor can make any line sound cool.
I think so. I think you're right about that.
But then Rose starts noticing words everywhere.
Yeah, this, by the way, is the Terranation trope.
Yeah, she's been sitting on the playground for how long? And then, just because the plot requires her to, she starts seeing the words bad wolf everywhere.
Freaking everywhere, including big enough to be seen by a plane right in front of her.
But Mickey says that's been there for years. It's just a phrase, just words.
Yeah, does that also mean that she would have grown up with that graffiti?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is an important thing. But Rose then says something, and I'll quote the line because...
Go for it.
It makes no sense.
I agree. I completely agree that it makes no sense. I'm so glad that it's not just me. All right, go for it.
I thought it was a warning. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's a message. The same words written down now and 200,000 years in the future. It's a link between me and the Doctor. Bad wolf here, bad wolf there. And then Mickey says, you know, well, if it's a message, what the hell's the message saying? And Rose says, it's telling me I can get back, that I can help him escape.
Yeah, wait, how is it doing that?
Yeah,
can someone please give me a Rose to English dictionary? Because I do not understand, A, why is... Why is it called bad wolf? That's A. I don't get that. And
I get that.
What, who's afraid of the big bad wolf?
No.
Okay.
The thing is that if you believe what she said there, that it's a link, a message, drawing her back to Satellite 5, everything makes perfect sense.
No, really.
Why it's bad wolf. Oh, it does to me.
Okay.
If you believe her, and I've just realised exactly why.
Okay, yeah, go for it, because I have no idea.
No, I will tell you at the end of the episode for spoilers.
Oh, you bastard. Fine, I will sit here on the edge of my seat. Ugh.
On the edge of destruction?
On the edge of discretion, I'll have you know.
Anyway, we cut back, we see Jack getting ready to fight the Daleks.
We get people dying left, right and centre.
Rose has gone back to the TARDIS with Mickey and is trying to open the TARDIS console, as happened with Blon in Boomtown.
Yeah.
And he's attached a chain to the TARDIS console and a chain to his pathetic little Mini. And
I happen to like Minis. I think they are charming vehicles.
Not his. And
no, agreed. I completely agree with that.
So he's trying to do that.
Wait. I'm sorry. Gotta cut you off. he's got a new car since the episode Rose.
Yes.
He was not driving a Mini. He was driving some sort of... I can't remember what it was. It was like a cross between a early 1980s Saab and a very uncomfortable-looking butt plug. It did not look at all as fashionable as his current vehicle.
Okay, that's a valid point.
I think so. This is not important anyway. The guy's got a new car, I'm just saying.
This is a year and a half after Rose, because there was a year's time jump. So. Yeah,
very true.
So they're trying to do that, and back in Satellite 5, Jack says, okay, activate all the internal lasers, but Linda with a Y says, nope, or Daleks have turned those off. So everyone starts shooting at the Daleks, and then we get the line which you mentioned earlier, where the guy turns around and goes, you lied to me.
Yeah,
the
chick says, I can't remember her name, it doesn't really matter. Okay, here's a little point from TARDIS Wikia, because I have a combination of TARDIS Wikia notes and my brain at my disposal at the moment. And according to TARDIS Wikia, Jack did not lie. His information about the bullets is simply not up to spec. Like, he is not aware of the fact that the Daleks have this force field.
That's possible.
It is possible, yeah.
You know, there's nothing to say that this force field didn't come in, but...
And wait, you know,
We have had Bastic bullets before.
Oh, really?
In the show, yeah.
When?
I'm going to try and remember the name of the episode, because I always get this one wrong. There were three Doctor Who episodes, one for Davison, one for McCoy, and one for Colin.
Okay.
And each of them is of the form of word of the Daleks.
Yeah.
And the word for all three begins with the letter R, so I get mixed up between them. It's Remembrance, Resurrection, and the
Revenge?
Colin one... No, Revelation.
Revelation,
right?
Okay.
And it's Revelation of the Daleks, where Orsini destroyed a Dalek, and he was firing Bastic bullets.
Very interesting. Yeah. Also, I wanted to point out, there is actually a point in this episode where the bullet is effective, because one of the... they're not a couple, but there are two people who used to work on the station who had kind of a bit of romantic tension between them, and later on, well, actually, like, in a moment now, in fact, we sort of get the scene where, hey, when all this is done, how about I go and buy you a drink? Except not sounding like a fake Dalek Emperor or with a fake American accent. And one of those two fires at oncoming
the
Daleks.
Ice dog.
Exactly, exactly. So there is still that possibility. However, Jack never told the people whom he has given these Bastic bullets. He never tells them, listen, aim for the ice dog. In fact, what he says is, concentrate your fire.
That's true. So, back on the space station, the android from The Weakest Link blows three Daleks up.
Yep.
No, this is where my pin has materialized.
Oh, okay, all right, excellent, go for it.
How can she blow three Daleks up? It's not a bloody laser, it's a transmat beam.
Holy shit, mind blown. You're so right, it's not a laser.
And the Daleks have shut down the transmat, so they can't be transmatted anywhere. So you've got a transmat beam that shouldn't work at all.
You're right, you are completely right. Oh my god, that is an amazing observation!
Thankfully, the Daleks then exterminate the Marquis de Carabas, and we move on.
And also the android.
Yes, and the android.
But you know what? I'm going to say, they did this because no one noticed it. I didn't notice it. When I watched this, I was thinking, yeah, well, it's a laser beam. It's just disintegrating Daleks.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Meanwhile, back at the TARDIS, Jackie's turned up.
Yes, she has.
And they have a mother-daughter conversation.
Yeah.
And she reveals...
When Dad died...
Dad wouldn't give up.
Yeah.
And Jackie says, well, even if he was here, he'd say the same as I did. And then Rose really just punches Jackie in the face with her words by saying, no, he wouldn't. He'd tell me to try anything. If I could save the Doctor's life, try anything.
And then she says something which I actually have to ask you about, because I think I've forgotten this already from the episode Father's Day. She says, when Dad died, there was a woman with him. You saw her from afar. And she doesn't actually say it, but it is implied that I was that woman. And Jackie gets it.
And Jackie obviously had met Rose, because they said, who's this fucking trollop?
That's my question. My question, in fact, in my notes is, was history restored in Father's
Day?
Jackie go, wait, hang on, you're totally right. That's you. In fact, she would have had that revelation ages ago when she found out about the time travelling.
I think she might have forgotten that, because, you know, forgetting one woman during a dinner or a wedding, right, is fine. But you don't forget someone that was holding your husband's hand as he died. You don't. right? So this, I actually have no complaint about this.
I reckon because that was the day that her husband passed away, she would definitely remember the girl that came to the church with him. And yeah, when she found out later on that there was time travel in her daughter's life, I reckon automatically her mind would have gone, wait a minute. No. That's you.
No, Jackie is not the sharpest tool in the book. And it was 20 years ago, right? I'm actually a similar age to Jackie.
Busted.
Well, possibly, because Camille Cajori is immortal.
She is immortal.
As we discussed in Father's Day.
Congratulations, JD. You are also a Highlander.
There can be only one.
I was just about to say that. If you ever meet Camille Cajori and she's toting a sword, just run.
No, because I can take a quickening, gain all of her memories and acting ability. Back to the Doctor Who. Right, thank you. Highlander, we win. Right, so, I have no problem with this.
Okay, fair enough.
Basically, Jackie then runs out of the time.
I'm going to call it a draw, personally, but yeah, go for it.
Okay. We go back to Spaceship One, Satellite 5.
Yeah, and now the Daleks, they are attacking the Earth.
This is perfection! I have created heaven on Earth. And Jack is on floor 499. He's basically the last line of defense against the Daleks.
Yeah.
And he says, concentrate your fire on the Dalek Ice Stalk.
Oh, he does say it. He says that on the Ice Stalk.
He says it now. He says it now, not after the people are dead. Back at the Powell Estate, Mickey and Rose are having a discussion. And, you know, Rose is moved on to the next stage of grief because she's turned around and gone, maybe we should just lock the door. Leave, go away, and then Jackie Tyler turns around driving a large pickup truck, a large recovery vehicle.
Yeah, it's not a pickup truck. It's like a massive freaking super lorry.
And says, doesn't matter where I got it from, you were right about your dad. He was full of mad ideas, and yeah, this is exactly what he would have done.
Yeah, and that's really, really cool, but let's just press pause and rewind a little bit, because she doesn't just say, it doesn't matter where I got it from. She says that the truck belongs to a dude named Rodrigo, who, quote, owes her a favor. So, theorize, JD, why does Rodrigo owe Jackie a favor?
Boom, chaka, wow, wow.
Okay.
On floor 500, floor 499, actually, they actually destroy a Dalek before the woman and the man get exterminated.
Ah, yes, okay.
We skip to the observation deck, and Linda just says, I've got a problem, they found me. And the doc, to his credit, says, don't worry, Linda, you're okay, you're going to be my companion, you're in the next season, and the station's reinforced against meteors.
Yeah, alas, that's not going to be the case, though.
Get an amazing piece of Doctor Who, because we have...
On the spoilers. Observation deck, is this it?
Yeah.
I love this. This is nuts as well.
A Dalek is trying to cut its way through the door.
Yeah, wait, hang on, why? Like, it turns out, ladies and gentlemen, that the Daleks, they anticipated encountering a locked door and therefore outfitted one of their ranks with a blowtorch.
Now that I've verbalized it,
it actually makes perfect sense. It looks very, very Star Warsy.
But outside the windows in the vacuum of space, four Daleks just go level with the window, and we do not hear a sound, but their light bulbs on top of their head flash. It is irrelevant if you've ever watched this show before.
You don't
need to hear them, because you know exactly what they're saying.
Yep.
As
exterminate! A gorgeously fashioned scene. Fantastic. So well done. Can I also just point out... Okay, JD, pop quiz hotshot. In which...
I'll try and do my best.
In which episode of Doctor Who, previously reviewed on Who Back When, have we also stared out the window of a spaceship and seen an alien intelligence hover up and level with the people indoors?
The Sensorites.
Bingo! Congratulations. 10 points to Gryffindor.
Woohoo! I'm in Gryffindor! That made me more excited than they should have done. So on Satellite 5, the last two people alive are now Jack and the Doctor.
Yes.
On the Powell Estate, Jackie watches as Mickey is putting his foot down in the recovery truck, and after a few seconds, it works.
Yeah.
The console literally erupts and Rose looks into the heart of the TARDIS.
Yeah, and absorbs it, practically, like all and this energy.
Yeah, and the TARDIS dematerializes.
Yeah, door closes, boom, no goodbye, dematerialize.
Back to floor 500.
Holy Jesus. Jack is now... Go for it.
Jack is out of bullets.
Yeah, he is. And he's still just totally snake pliskining the Daleks.
Harrying. He's run out of bullets in his machine gun. He throws that away. He pulls out a pistol. He
runs out of bullets
it.
There as well. Just that. Goes, fine.
And the
so
and the
kill
Dalek.
Me.
And the Daleks kill him.
Yeah, he's dead. Captain Jack Harkness is dead. We don't have time to mourn. We cut.
And the TARDIS is hurtling through space. And then we cut to the Doctor.
Holy shit, and this is a cutscene that I completely missed. Really? We see the dark... Oh, we do, don't we? Yes, you're right. Okay, go for it.
You know, do you want to put this to the test? If I press this button, everyone dies.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's Mexican standoff between Daleks and Doctor.
So what are you, Doctor? Coward or killer?
And he can't do it. Finally, you know, he is not the war doctor that John Hurt will eventually become.
No, true.
And he says coward any day.
Yeah. And then you think, with Captain Jack just having been killed, the doctor being killed not far away, but, wibbly wobbly, the TARDIS pops up behind him. Just vroom, vroom in the control room.
The Dalek Emperor is shocked, scared. The Daleks
he goes,
are shocked,
what
scared.
The shit?
And the Doctor is just, like, going, what the hell is going on? And then out of the TARDIS, silhouetted in and backlit...
In this angelic light.
Rose walks out. She says, well, I looked into the TARDIS. The TARDIS looked into me.
Yeah. The Doctor goes, are you absolutely insane? Now you have... Does he say you have the time vortex in you?
You looked into the time vortex. Yeah, you've got the entire vortex running through your head. Right. And the Daleks try to exterminate her. And Rose just puts out a hand and goes, no, no, no. And then says,
I am the Bad Wolf. I create myself. I take the words. I scatter them in time and space. A message to leave myself here.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm going to go back to my spoiler pin that I put forward.
Please do, because I still don't get it.
Until she said at that playground, this is a message to leave myself there, right?
Yeah.
That was wrong at the time, because it wasn't, right? She's looking at words. Words that the future Rose will scatter through time.
Yeah.
The reason the future Rose is scattering them through time to lead past Rose back to the TARDIS to become the Bad Wolf is by scattering the words through time. It's a loop. The words are there because Rose read the words, went to the TARDIS, became the Bad Wolf, went to the station, scattered the words to allow herself to become the Bad Wolf to go back to the station.
Yeah, yeah.
To
no,
scatter the words.
Dude Meister, I totally get that. That's fine, and that's very true. You're completely right.
Rose
still does not explain, however, how it doesn't. Okay, why is it called? Why is she called the Bad Wolf? First of all,
that's just the words.
Yeah, but why pick those words? Why not pick something that is, let's say, like we have Torchwoods, which is the anagram of Doctor Who. Why not, in the same vein, for example, have something that is an anagram of, let's say, Heart of the TARDIS or whatever?
Okay, would you like to know the out-of-universe answer to this?
Yes, please. If you say that the polarity is wrong, I shall not be amused.
The out-of-universe reason for this was that the words Bad Wolf being written on the side of the TARDIS in Aliens of London was just a bit of graffiti. There was no meaning behind it whatsoever.
Oh.
And then Russell T. Davis decided, now we've had this, let's put Bad Wolf into all the episodes and I'll write something at the end of the season where Bad Wolf comes around.
You know what? That makes sense.
That's how it was. Because Bad Wolf was just some graffiti that a kid scrawled on the TARDIS just as a little thing. And then Russell, when he did Unquiet Dead, put in Gwyneth's line about, I see inside you the big Bad Wolf. And that's why it was written. And so he had to write, therefore, Rose as the words Bad Wolf. I am the Bad Wolf.
I accept it. I think that's a fantastic explanation. However, that explanation, as you said, that's not something that occurs inside the universe. That's something that occurs on the outside of that universe. And therefore, it doesn't make 100% sense to me.
No, and the reason why it doesn't make any sense in-universe is because Rose is only sending the message back because she thinks that it should be a message to herself. So she sort of, her mistake of thinking it's a message, which at the time it wasn't, is what makes it the message, because she then becomes godly and creates a message. So
can I also just point out something else as well?
I think it's called a predestination paradox.
Okay. I'm going to just throw in another suggestion here. So she looks into the heart of the TARDIS. She becomes this time vortex human, right? She travels through time, and as in, she is clearly able to travel through time and pop little clues in different places, different times. Why not go back to the estate playground where she saw that massive helicopter sign for Bad Wolf written on the ground? Why not just go there and literally just leave a message, not two words that harken back to some meaningless graffiti, but actually leave a message for her past self that says, listen, go to the TARDIS, speak to the heart of the TARDIS, or look into the heart of the TARDIS. Boom.
If this had been written by Stephen Moffat, that's exactly what would have happened.
Yeah.
But what Russell T. Davies was doing was just making it so that the companion saved the day like this. And to be honest, I don't care. I don't care how little sense it makes.
Fair enough.
Because I want you safe, my doctor, protected from the false god.
Yeah.
And I can see every single atom of your existence, and everything must come to dust. And she just puts out her hand, and every Dalek in existence dies, making her literally the biggest deus ex machina. Literally, because literally she is what the Greek meant by this term, the god from the box. Quite literally.
Yeah.
She is the god from the blue box here.
There you go. Just to point out, I have been criticizing this, but I think it's brilliant. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
You're doing what I did for Empty Child, which is where I managed to spend the entire episode nitpicking about Captain Jack Harkness's costume.
Yeah.
And still gave it a 4.8.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's fine. So that's it. The god of all Daleks is gone. The Daleks are all dead. Everyone's dead. The only people alive on this station are the Doctor and Deus Ex Rose. The Doctor goes, well, right, now, you've done it now. Everyone's dead. Just stop. Let this power which is inside you go.
Yeah, wait, there's something else that happens as well.
And this is where it happens.
Oh, sorry, go for it.
And she turns around and goes, how can I let go of this? I bring life. And you get a cut of Captain Jack coming back to life.
Yes. Question. What about all the humans who were just killed on Earth?
She doesn't give many fucks.
Roughly how many, though?
Zero, actually.
Oh, I see.
She gives zero fucks about the people on Earth.
Mathematically, checks out.
She cares about the person who kissed her a few minutes ago.
Yeah. All right, so I have a question. When she steps out of the TARDIS and she starts talking to the Doctor and she says, my doctor, all that stuff, is this Rose or is this perhaps the TARDIS speaking?
Yep, a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So the Doctor turns around and goes, right, this power is going to kill you because, you know, you're burning up.
Yeah.
I think you need a doctor. So he kisses her.
Yeah.
He takes the time vortex into him, which he then shoves back into the TARDIS.
Yeah. And she passes out, I think.
She passes out, and then they take off in the TARDIS. As Jack comes running in...
Misses the TARDIS, basically.
And misses the TARDIS.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile... Yeah?
Sorry. The Doctor doesn't have to kiss Rose for this to happen.
No.
Why does he kiss Rose? Is it because for this entire season, there is a huge portion of the viewership who has been waiting for this to happen?
I don't know, actually. It will become next season exactly what is happening.
Sure.
I don't think she was ever in love with Eccleston Doctor. She is with Tennant.
Yeah.
No, I think this is just a way to show him doing it. I really do think that.
Okay. Yeah, no, fair. Good answer. All right. Sorry. So, go for it.
Then Rose wakes up in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And, you know, she says, the Doctor's saying, I was going to take you to so many places. Barcelona. Not the city, the planet.
As he's saying these things, and there's this typical Eccleston Doctor grin on his face, every now and then, all of a sudden, he just has to interrupt himself because he is so very clearly in pain. And we get an explanation now. Well, actually, we don't really get an explanation. We get a hint, or Rose, rather, gets a hint about Gallifreyan regeneration.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does say it's a dodgy process, but then
It's a dodgy process, and he tells Rose to stay away from him.
Yeah.
And then we get his... Right, no one should absorb the time vortex. I'm dying. And then we get Eccleston's next to final words.
Shall we soundbite that?
Let's. Soundbite?
Soundbite.
Before I go...
Don't say that.
Rose. Before I go, I just want to tell you, you were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And you know what? So was I.
It is so sad. I have gone from hating Eccleston for not being Tom Baker to now being genuinely sad that he's gone.
Oh, hello! Okay, new teeth. that's weird. So, where was I? Oh, that's right, Barcelona!
And cut. That's it. We now have a new Doctor. We have David Tennant as the Doctor. Farewell, Eccleston. Eccleston, you were... fantastic. You were right. You were fantastic. Now we have David Tennant, and he's going to be fantastic as well.
So,
but so far, he's just new. We don't know what to expect.
So for the people who are just tuning in and listening to episode 13 and have not listened to N001 Rose, you started off really disliking Eccleston and didn't think he was a very good Doctor.
Yeah, well, I remember from... By the way, spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do a little Eccleston recap bonus episode, and I'm sure this will come up then as well, but I distinctly remember, in fact, when I started watching the Doctor Who reboot back in 2005, thinking that I didn't like Eccleston's Doctor. Like, why was he wearing a leather jacket? It seemed to me, and I really remember thinking this, it seemed like they were trying to do something very modern that wasn't working, and that Eccleston just wasn't right for the part. But now, having rewatched it, Jesus balls, 9 years later, it works. That he absolutely pulls it off. It's fantastic.
Yes, it's amazing. Mm. We get David Tennant, and, you know, he's about to have an amazing run on Doctor Who, to the point where he is probably 30 years down the line, the only single person that will challenge Tom Baker at the top of that chart.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that when you go back and ask someone to name, who was the Doctor, you will have a 50-50 chance that someone will say
Tom Baker or David Tennant.
Or someone will say David Tennant.
Yeah.
He is about to have an amazing run. But we will leave that for the Christmas invasion.
Yes. Reviews. You're going to start this time, dude. I've been starting the past few episodes, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely fine. I have no problem with starting about this one.
Go for it.
This was the second part of a two-parter, the first part of which I didn't particularly like. And I'm glad, therefore, that we are not marking these as one episode, because it would fail immensely to live up to how good Parting of the Ways is.
Do you remember what you gave?
I don't remember what I gave it either. I can't remember what I gave it, but it wasn't particularly high.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, go to whobackwhen.com and check it out. We gave it something, I assure you. It was between 0.0 and 5.0.
It might have been the high threes. I'm unsure.
Mm. Anyway, sorry.
But either way, Parting of the Ways, from start to finish, doesn't let up. You know, you don't get a moment where you're thinking, well, what's happening next?
Mm.
You know, I did not in any way find this slow. The reason why I can quote so many lines from this, apart from making notes on them earlier, is because there are so many quotable lines in this. From Rose's, I am the bad wolf, I create myself, to practically anything the Emperor Dalek says. The supporting cast are basically irrelevant. You've got Linda with a Y being nice in the corner, you've got a couple of people from Satellite 5, fine, don't care. You have the Emperor Dalek, you have the Dr. Jack and Rose, and you have Mickey, and you have some actually really good characterization of Jackie,
yeah,
as done by Camille. The ending of the episode, as I have stated a number of times, is possibly the single most literal Deus Ex Machina ever in Doctor Who. It is literally a god coming out of the box and solving it. It's exactly what the Greeks used to do to finish their plays off, which is where the term came from. And I don't care, because in a way where I really cared, at the end of Boomtown where it happened because it made no sense. It makes sense now because the TARDIS wouldn't want to save blonde Felfotch Pasmina Day Slovene. The TARDIS would want to save the Doctor.
Yeah.
So the TARDIS is being given, you know, a human being to give, you know, a chance to save her Doctor. Both of them, Rose and the TARDIS together, conjoined, and this Bad Wolf entity. I don't care that scattering the letters Bad Wolf throughout time and space makes no sense, because it makes sense in Rose's head, and actually, in universe, that's all that actually matters.
Yeah.
Rose bringing Jack back to life, thank goodness. Rose's ability to theoretically bring back life to the entire universe, bring back the Time Lords, do whatever she wants, and she brings back Jack Harkness. Well, thank God Barrowman gets to come back again and have his own series. Brilliant. Yeah. Rose, you picked the right one here.
Agreed.
I have very little else to say on this. The special effects are, as always, amazing. The Daleks look amazing. You have great acting. You've got a regeneration. Looks great. Far better than sort of cross-fading and people in silly wigs. I don't care. This is an amazing episode. It is a toss-up as to whether this is as good as Dalek or not, and most people will say it's probably not as good as Dalek. I don't care what they say. They can write in to whobackwhen.com and tell me why I'm wrong for giving this a 5.0.
Yeah, in fact, leave that comment on the website. I want to know. Wait, hang on. Did you just say you gave this a 5.0?
Have I not just gone through the entire episode, basically quoting it and loving it from start to finish?
Yeah.
I am the Bad Wolf here. I create this 5.0 for this episode, and I don't care what you say, because if you turn around and give it anything other than 5.0, I'm going to crumble you to dust and get Jack in to do the rest of the episode.
Okay, well, I wish you hadn't said that, because now people are going to think that I was coerced into saying, and spoiler alert, I absolutely agree with you. I am also giving this a 5.0. This episode, yes, it follows on immediately from the end of Bad Wolf, but I view this very much as a separate story. There are two things that link it back. There's Rose being on the Dalek spaceship, and then there is... three things. Then there's the androids, and then there's Carabas. But aside from that, this is just another continuation of Season 1. We've already been on Satellite 5 before. This is just as much a continuation of Long Game as it is of Bad Wolf. We've seen fantastic pacing in episodes before in Season 1 of the Doctor Who revival, but the pacing in this episode is so much better than the pacing has been so far from the very beginning, where we know within seconds that we are in for such an incredibly bombastic finale for Eccleston. And actually, you know what? I'm going to interrupt myself. I'm going to ask a question. When people were watching this in 2005, did they know that this was Eccleston's last episode?
Yes, because the BBC managed to leak that after, I think it was End of the World.
Okay.
Episode 2. So Everyone knew that this was coming.
He was going to do one season. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And Russell T. Davis had actually planned that no one would know. This was filmed with a second ending. Which they were going to release to the press when they did screen this. And that was actually Rose doing her Bad Wolf, destroying the God of All Daleks, and then the Doctor carrying her into the TARDIS, and all you saw was a TARDIS TV screen going, warning, life form dying. With no regeneration, no anything, in order to keep it a secret.
Okay.
But sadly, it got leaked after End of the World.
All right, no, awesome. In a way that actually puts us reviewing it now in a favorable position, because we also knew that this was going to be Eccleston's last episode before we started watching it. From the very beginning, we know that this is going to be fantastic. We have so much at stake. We have the future of the Doctor. We have the life of Captain Jack Harkness. We have the relationship between Rose and Doc. We have, in a way, the freedom, like the emotional freedom of Mickey Rickey, even though, and yes, he does a great job in this episode, but I still have to say, even though I do not give a shit. We have finally tying up the loose ends of Jackie and Rose, as in Jackie not knowing that Rose had been there before, and now finally putting those two together. We have the defeat of the Daleks, a return to a scene we've been in before. There is so much going on, and then we have these amazing characters, and aside from the main cast, and Eccleston is great, obviously, Rose is doing such a good job here, especially when she's back in 2005, and she realizes what she's now suddenly lost. Especially then, she does such an incredibly good job. And Jack Harkness, and the main cast is great, but aside from that, we also get the Emperor, who is such a tremendous character. So scary, so menacing, and I didn't realize that we had encountered him before, so to speak, on Doctor Who. I really look forward to seeing the prior incarnations of that character now. And we also get Linda with a Y, and even though she was annoying as hell, she still did a great job. And there was that tension, the competition, who's the better companion, Rose or Linda with a Y. I really enjoyed seeing that, and that was tugging at my heartstrings as I watched it. Especially when Rose is no longer there, and she's been usurped by this bimbo who can't act. I love this episode through and through. I'm so sad to see Eccleston go, but at the same time, I'm so pleased that David Tennant is here. 5.0, no doubt about it.
It's, in a way, an incredibly fitting ending for the Doctor. You've had some endings and beginnings of Doctor Who where they haven't really been as good as the Doctor was. And you've come from Paul McGann, who didn't get a regeneration until 9 years after this date.
Yeah.
You know, you had some stories like Legopolis, which are generally not a brilliant episode to go out on. That was Tom Baker's last one.
Yeah.
But then again, you have episodes like Caves Around Dazani and War Games. Caves Around Dazani, Peter Davison's regeneration one, is generally considered the high point of Doctor Who. Not classic, not new. It is the high point of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And you can put Parting of the Ways up there with Caves Around Dazani and say, this, watch this episode, and this is what Doctor Who is.
I am emotionally spent. What do you say we listen to what some of our listeners had to say about this episode?
Yes. Yes. Tell us what your listeners have said about this episode.
JD, I don't want to alarm you or anything, but I'm pretty sure the Dalek Emperor has entered the studio.
Give this episode a 0.1. Not enough, Emperor.
Listener Minis.
Thank you very much for that beautiful introduction, Dalek Emperor. Bada bing, we have two listener minis. And the first one comes from Robert M. Albrecht. Rob, how are you, sir? And he has sent in, as we actually mentioned in our Bad Wolf review, he has sent in a combined mini for both Bad Wolf and Parting of the Ways. And he starts, an excellent show, but it's too long. All the reality television stuff could be cut down to half the time. The Daleks are superb, and we see Tennant for the first time. As Tennant was my first Doctor, I saw the Eccleston episodes quite late, and I really like Eccleston. He should have done more, but I still didn't get what's up with Barcelona. Perhaps the almighty JD could enlighten me there. Perhaps indeed.
If the TARDIS can grant the power of simply erasing the Daleks, can't the TARDIS do this herself? Perhaps the Doctor should sometimes simply ask his police box to arrest the villain, but this might get boring over time, so perhaps it's better not to ask. And he gives this a 4.5 out of 5.
Fantastic point there, dude. Awesome. Yes, you're right. And if it is the TARDIS, at least partly the TARDIS speaking through Rose, yes, Jesus, balls, this is the power of the TARDIS, not the power of Rose, clearly. Well done. Nicely observed. JD, but can you enlighten him?
Well, two things here. First of all, thank you for your review, Robert.
Yeah, thank you.
Many people had Tennant as their first Doctor. So, you know, Robert's not unusual in this. Many people came in a Tennant. And I mentioned that I was recording Parting of the Waves. And one of my friends, hi, Ryan. That's Ryan Jones.
Hey,
hi,
Ryan. Rye.
Yes. And Ryan is probably one of the bigger Tennant fans that I know. So hopefully between Ryan and Claire Hamilton Russell, who did the review for Bad Wolf, they'll be reviewing some of our Tennant episodes as well. But to answer Robert's question on Barcelona, we need to travel back in time. So get into our TARDIS and let's travel back to the 30th of March, 1985.
Ooh, okay.
So
can I also just preface this by saying that I really tried to find out what was up with Barcelona in whenever it was, 85, and I could not find anything.
What you need to know is, had this show have been cancelled,
yeah,
had this have been a one-season show, they were going to cut off the word Barcelona and have them say, I'm going to take you to B, and then stop after the B sound. And that's a Russell T. Davies homage to a Colin Baker episode called Revelation of the Daleks.
Okay.
Which I might have mentioned earlier in this episode, actually.
Yeah, you did.
So the last line was the Doctor to Perry, Perpigillian Brown. The last word was edited down to being buh there as well. And that was going to lead into the next episode, which was called A Nightmare Fair, which was to see the return of the Celestial Toymaker in Blackpool running a games arcade.
Oh, wow.
Which would have been written by Graham Williams. But what happened instead was that the show was put onto an 18-month, what they called a hiatus. It was canned for 18 months.
Yeah.
So the last word was edited from being Blackpool to being buh. So this was Russell T. Davies's homage to that, where had it have been cancelled, he was also going to edit out the rest of the word.
That is fantastic trivia. Oh my God. Hey, Rob Meister, I'm assuming that you are equally in awe as I am right now. That was awesome, JD. Thank you. Holy crap. What a fantastic story.
It's what you paid me for.
Yeah, I know.
I do get paid for this, don't I? Actually,
dude, check's in the mail.
I'll check it again tomorrow. Our next review comes from Alan Trussler. That is Gallifrey and Buccaneer.
You're damn right. Alan, how you doing?
And
Wait, I'm still waiting for Alan to answer. He's not there. Okay, now go for it.
And if you wish to learn more about Alan's wordings, I know we normally do it at the end, but I'm just twisting it up a little.
You can
follow him on Twitter. He is at Alan Trussler. That's Trussler with two S's. Alan says, the Doctor in the Big Brother house. Anyone else feel like they've lost a bet for things most unlikely to happen on Doctor Who?
So this is the big finale of Doctor Who's first revived series, and it's a damn good one. Bad Wolf is a surreal episode with the Doctor and co. trapped in twisted versions of modern day game shows. It gives me a bit of a kick that some American viewers unfamiliar with British game shows actually believed that they were a good fictional satire on the whole genre of TV. Not that they aren't, but having them based in reality really does heighten that feeling. It's a solid, intriguing episode with the mystery of who rules the Bad Wolf Corporation. I've mentioned before my love of the Doctor's line, "I created this world," a wonderful bit of recompense for his actions. Made even worse when it's revealed to be his greatest foe who used his failure to their benefit.
The finale of Bad Wolf with the reveal of the Daleks. Alert! Alert! We are detected! Always sends shivers up my spine. The Doctor's no speech is brilliant, and I think this is one of the best cliffhangers in all of Who.
Parting of the Ways follows through with gusto, with a terrific opening, bringing in the extrapolator from Boomtown, avoiding any Deus Ex Machina resolution complaints. Yeah, okay.
Not yet. The side characters are fleshed out well to win the sympathy, or lack thereof, in the case of Roderick. The Daleks here are a massive threat, exterminating for the sheer hell of it, just as they should, slowly invading the station. There are creepy moments of brilliance, such as the noiseless extermination of Linda, the cries of the dying contestants, and more comedic moments, such as the android versus Daleks, amount to a dreadful air to the whole thing.
The Dalek Emperor's booming, zealotry-driven voice is a perfect enhancement of what makes the Daleks scary, and the body horror is enhanced all the more with his sickening line of the sifted, pulped humans becoming Daleks. Think how revolted the Doctor must be that his treasured human race are corrupted to Daleks.
The threads throughout the series all come to a close here, with Mickey, Jackie's mention of Pete, her reluctance to send Rose into danger, all harken back to Father's Day in Aliens of London. And she's right, Rose would have died, just as everyone else on the station does at the end of the story. Jack, Linda, Roderick, the budding romantic office workers, no one is safe from the Daleks. The Bad Wolf series arc ends with the Doctor's redemption. He won't repeat his actions, he won't commit genocide once again. The Companion saves the day with a little help from the TARDIS, and the Doctor sacrifices his life for Rose.
His regeneration is exactly what we need from an outgoing Doctor. Reassuring, accepting, and celebratory of the life he led in this incarnation. A far cry from Tennant's, which I'll discuss my disdain for at a later date. Ooh, ominous.
I don't want to go. The Ninth Doctor reintroduced a whole new generation to the magic of Doctor Who. Christopher Eccleston, although reluctant to revisit the role, gave his all in his performance and portrayal of the darkest Doctor we'd seen to date. It's brilliant, then, that even out of this, in a story where everyone dies, we are reminded of the warmth he brought to the role. a time when everyone lived, grooving to Britney Spears with a wide grin, saving planets and stopping evil. In a word, he was fantastic. From Gallifrey and Buccaneer, Bad Wolf and the Parting of the Ways gets a 4.4. And I think the summary of Eccleston in that last paragraph was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, with the exception of maybe mild disagreement when it comes to the Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
What can I say? Alan's done it again. He's knocked out a home run. Is that even the expression? I don't know, sports. Yeah, Alan, awesome review. Thank you very much for sending that in.
And that's it for Eccleston. Next time we will be doing the Christmas invasion in New Who, which
yes, will
introduce us to a new Doctor. It will have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of Mickey Smith.
Yay, I'm so pleased.
And Harriet Jones, MP for Flydale.
Oh, ooh. I love her. She's great.
And we will take a little retrospective look at Christopher Eccleston in a bonus episode.
Damn right we will.
Coming soon to a SoundCloud podcast, iTunes, near you.
Plenty of other podcast repositories as well. Ladies and gentlemen, if there is a single one among you who thinks that JD is not worth stalking on the interwebs, then why are you listening? Here's step one in stalking JD. He is looking mighty concerned right now, by the way. Follow him on Twitter. He is at...
He is at Ponkin. P-O-N-K-E-N. Ponkin.
Nice try. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K.
And after you've stalked me and I've died hideously in a pool of blood and ended up on Crime Watch, if, on the other hand, you wish more from Ponkin and his words of wisdom, you can follow him at Ponkin. That's P-O-N-K-E-N.
P-O-N-K-E-N. Do not blaspheme and spell it with a C.
Thank you, Dalek Emperor.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you for listening. Be right next week. Oh. Sorry?
Ka-chow.
Smooches.
It's been wonderful.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what you know in your heart to be the right thing and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Like us on Facebook, that's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Find us on Google Plus, that's plus Who Back When, all in one word. And follow or add or like us there. I have no idea what it's called on Google Plus, but if you're on Google Plus, then you should do that. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, and have a peek around our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which is increasing in badassdom by the day. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really would, but we're also planning a pretty fun surprise for everyone who has. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or Audio Who Review. Ciao, ciao.
Who Back When?